This is a Federal News Network podcast.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars sponsored by WEPA. Join NITP for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to the June 15th, 2020 For Your Benefit radio show. We're here this morning with Brian Kurz. Brian is a certified financial planner, fellow seminar presenter, and we talked before coming on air, of course, and he's always topical. And we got a lot to talk about with regards to topical issues. So, good morning.
Morning, Bob. How are you doing?
Everything's good and soon to be better. I'm going to listen to you and take notes. So, if we start off.
All right, sounds great.
All right, we got three emails, and I'm not going to do those yet. What we have going on now with the anxiousness about the markets and the like, do people, should they go to the life cycle funds? How do they allocate? I mean, this is a whole show, but how do you talk people off the ledge?
Yeah, great question. These are certainly crazy times that we're living in. And as a financial advisor dealing with clients day to day and, you know, making those strategy decisions, I've definitely had more people over these last couple months taking a pause and reflecting and asking, should we be making changes than under normal times? And you know, that's certainly with good reason. We're dealing with things that we've haven't seen before. So I think it's really important to focus on why we're investing the way that we are, and time horizon becomes more important than ever. The allocation we want to use, it's really a combination of how much risk we're willing to take and that time frame. But if I need money, you know, 6 months, a year from now, then what's happening right now has a huge impact on everything. And you know, I certainly don't know where the market may be come this fall or early next year, versus if I've got my money set aside and I'm not touching it for 10 or 15 or 20 years. So that's the first thing I want to do with someone is revisit that time frame. And you know, you say talking them off the ledge, but it, you know, it depends whether, again, we need money or not, because maybe we should be making changes if there's money in stocks that we're going to need pretty soon.
Okay. And the term risk and risky, many years ago when I first heard the terms with regards to money, I go, well, are they really saying risky? And I don't think that's the case. So risk is, you're going to put it in more eloquent terms than I, but if I put my money under the proverbial mattress or I was real daring and I went out and got a certificate of deposit, that's somewhat risk-free. So then somebody might say, well, why don't you look at bonds or the market? I guess there is a risk there. So help me and our listeners to understand risk isn't as rough as it sounds.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's, you know, within our TSP, you've got, like you said, the CD options and the fixed investments, that's going to fall under our G fund, and we're taking very little risk. Everything that's in the stock market are CS&I funds, and as we'll get into, the life cycle funds make up a good part of those. There's certainly going to be risk there in that they may go up or down a lot day to day. But again, time is your friend as well. If I'm in the 2040 funds and I'm not touching this money for another 20 years, then it doesn't matter that much how much my account goes up or down this quarter or this year. What matters is what is it worth 20 years from now when I need it. So a lot of that risk can be smoothed out over time. And that's why we're willing to have some fluctuation, is because we've got more time to access that money. But what I recommend for looking at my TSP allocation, my overall assets, and really my net worth as a whole, is I want to break things down into how much do I have tied to the stock market, because I am going to have fluctuation and volatility there, and then how much do I have in everything else. And my life cycle funds, I can look at the allocation and what do I have in CS&I, those three stock components, and then I can separate that out from GNF. So when you hear someone talk about a 60-40 portfolio or an 80-20 portfolio, they're talking about the total amount that's tied to the stock market and the total amount that's tied to fixed income. So I definitely want to be aware of that, but I don't have to shy away from risk if I've got some time to access the money, because, as I mentioned, things will smooth out in the long run.
Okay, I know that you would never advise people to do something that they would be uncomfortable with, but in first meeting some folks, and we deal with a fairly conservative group with regards to finances, and you'd say, listen, you're at a certain age, then you might want to consider mutual fund, you might want to consider stocks, or managing their portfolio within the thrift. But they just, you know, they didn't want to go beyond the G fund. How do you get them to dip their toe in the water?
Yeah. And, you know, what's funny is a lot of times people that don't have a lot of investment experience, they're more conservative by nature, and they may be the ones that want to stick with the G fund, or that's all they've been invested in for the last, you know, 10 years since they started, things like that. But those are the people that, again, have the longest time horizon. So even if you're a conservative investor, if I put you through a risk tolerance questionnaire, even if you want to be as conservative as it gets, if you're not touching this money for 10, 20, 30 years, it really makes sense to consider some allocation to the stock market, because history has shown us that we have higher potential returns there and we've got the time to absorb the ups and downs. There's a flip side to that as well. If we have taken that plunge, so to speak, and I've gotten some money tied to stocks, then what happens as I'm approaching retirement is a lot of clients become very comfortable with some of the ups and downs that they've seen in the market, and they're not inclined to necessarily scale things back. But they may be retiring, they may be starting to pull money out, and the fact is they really should be looking at scaling back their risk in that instance. Once I do need to take distributions, if I had to pull money out in March this year, then I had to sell when things were down a lot. And it doesn't matter that we've seen a recovery since then in the market. That money that I had to sell and pull out in March and spend it on my mortgage payment, that doesn't have a chance to recover. So that's, as I said, that is coming back to time horizon really being a key element in how I'm designing allocation.
Okay, I like what you just said. By the way, folks, we don't rehearse the questions. I just listen and come up with the questions. How about somebody that just was really opposed to do anything? Now, aggressive is a poor choice of words. Slow growth, a moderate mutual fund. And you said, listen, try it. Not with all your money, a piece of it. Did it generally work out? Was it, I'm not going to do this again? Did the person, I'll put my toe in the water, and then did they put the rest of their foot in the water?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely try to be careful as an advisor never to, and I tell clients, my goal is not to get you to invest in an allocation that you're not comfortable with. If you really prefer being more conservative and that risk tolerance is low, then that's okay. My goal is to show you the best options within your time frame and risk tolerance and show you how you should be invested. In most instances, when clients invest money and maybe they know the time horizon and risk tolerance, it makes sense to put some money in the market, but they haven't done it before. In most instances, they stick with it and they wind up seeing the benefits. So I've been doing this 18 years and change, saw the end of the tech bubble burst, saw 2008. So I've certainly and obviously seen most recently. So I've seen some of the volatile times that we can have. And if we stick with it, then history has shown us that it works out. We're obviously never guaranteed what future performance would be. But again, a lot of it comes back to how long we're investing the money. Definitely recommend not overreacting to any short-term changes. I can show someone whether it's the TSP funds or some other mutual fund, I can show what this fund has done for the last 20 years. But there's definitely a tendency when you put your first dollar in that if it goes up this month, it's the greatest thing ever. If it goes down this month, then are we sure this was a good idea? Maybe we should be getting out of this. There's definitely this attachment that we then have to the investment performance, when the fact is the fund has been going up and down long before you decided to put your money in. So I think it's important not to get too emotionally tied to the short-term ups and downs of the performance within it.
Yeah, and good. I have three emails, and I forget already if I've already asked the first one. Isn't it a smart move to protect one's portfolio with unemployment, Federal Reserves, and the like? But the question here is, even if I did bring it up before, how do you, quote, protect, end of quote? I'd imagine different people see protection in a different way.
Yeah, they do. So, you know, when you say that, what I hear is scary, scary, scary. Unemployment, dealing with this pandemic, a lot of uncertainty, Federal Reserve lowering our Fed funds rate to zero, not a lot of bullets left, so to speak, as far as, you know, sparking the economy with interest rate changes. So those are certainly scary circumstances. But if we were having this conversation at, you know, the end of March, then that would have, a lot of those concerns would have applied as well. So there could be an argument, well, shouldn't I be pulling everything out at the end of March because things are really scary right now? And the fact is, we'd already seen a really big pullback in the market. So the question becomes, and the market's definitely a leading indicator, it's trying to figure out where things are going. If, you know, when we have this massive sell-off in the market, sure, things are scary. And that's why our emotional side of things in some ways is going to lead us to the wrong decision, because when we've already seen that massive pullback, you know, the end of 2008, March of this year, our inclination is, I don't want to lose everything. Let's get all my money out now. Let's stop the bleeding. And a lot of instances, based on the sell-offs, you may be at or near the lows in that instance. So if we move that money out based on those fears, then if that happened this year in March, then we've missed out on a pretty good recovery that we've had since then. So I really want to be careful to be too tied to those types of decisions, because the more things sell off, generally the scarier they are. But if we go back to a fundamental standpoint, if we look at the long-term opportunities within these companies, there may be plenty of growth opportunities there and ways to make money, which again, do we have the time horizon to take advantage of that? If I've got money I'm going to need later this year, I may not. If I've got money I'm not going to need for another 10 or 20 years, then I certainly do. So that really becomes the key if we should be making any changes to our allocations or not.
So after you have provided good tutelage to a client, do they become more active in following up with questions? Or are they very happy because you gave them good advice and the investment has done better than what they could have done on their own? Do you ever find that once they get a comfort level to put the toe in the water, do they ever put the rest of the body in the water as far as investments in stocks or mutual funds?
Yeah, definitely. I said there's definitely a comfort level that comes with all of this. But again, I think it's good to be balanced. Sometimes someone invests a little bit of money in, things go well, and now, you know, all of a sudden we're ready to put all of our money into penny stocks, and that's not necessarily a good idea. So I think staying the course is important. I have had clients where, you know, we did everything right coming in. We were rebalancing, we lowered their risk as we approached their time horizon. And then there's just this thought, well, you know, this is crazy times. We should change something. Should we be buying? Should we be selling? And they just feel this call to action based on what's going on. And that's not necessarily the case. If we've done everything right going in, then we might just be staying the course, and that's fine. And investing can be boring. We want to make sure we're doing it right, but watching our money grow is a long process, even if we're in the stock market. So we're going to see this volatility, and we don't want to be too tied off on what's happening day to day and the changes that we're seeing.
All righty, why don't we do this? Let's take a break. It's about break time, and let the folks gather their thoughts, and we'll be back after the break, and we'll listen to what WEPA, the sponsor of the show, can do for the listeners.
You have life insurance to protect the people you love. As a civilian federal employee, you have two choices designed specifically for you: WEPA and Fegley. The big difference? Price. Chances are WEPA premiums will cost you less. In fact, the average WEPA member saves $375 per year on premiums. Prioritize your peace of mind with a life insurance policy designed for feds by feds. If you're a civilian federal employee interested in comparing WEPA to Fegley, visit WAEPA.org today. WEPA is a proud sponsor of 4-Year Benefit, presented by NITP, Mondays 10:05 to 11 a.m. on Federal News Network, 1500 a.m. WEPA has been insuring the future of federal workers for more than 75 years. See why over 46,000 feds have already switched to WEPA at WAEPA.org.
Welcome back to For Your Benefit. We're here today talking with Brian Kurz. Brian is a certified financial planner, boots on the ground knowledge, fellow seminar presenter. And we talked general, not that we're going to dig real specific prior to the break. But if somebody was now saying, okay, I feel a little bit better, but I think I understand the letters in the thrift. I understand what's in the F fund. Well, maybe they don't. So why don't we just buzz through the letters, if you will. We don't have to spend a lot of time, but just so everybody understands the choices within the thrift.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great. So one of the nice things with our life cycle funds is they are kind of considered the way to set it and forget it. They're going to do the management for us. But I recommend in the seminars and with meeting with federal employees, I really recommend knowing what the underlying funds are and then having an idea of the allocation and how those allocations are going to change. Because we might like the idea of handing over the management, but we should still know how we're invested and what changes are going to take place. So I really want to group these into two categories for our individual funds, the stock funds, and then my fixed investment options. The CS&I funds are going to be my stock funds. The C fund is going to mirror the S&P 500, so that's my big companies. And you'll see this in the life cycle funds. The C fund is where I typically want most or at least a higher percentage of my stock-based fund, because these are, again, the S&P 500 companies, the big companies, the ones I see and deal with day to day. The small cap or fund or S fund is going to be making up the other smaller part of the market, the other 20% that's not represented in the C fund. And then my I fund is going to be international stocks. So that's going to be outside the US and Canada. So I see a couple things allocation wise. I'll see someone that maybe knows the concept that I will probably want a little more in the C fund than the others. And if they've designed it on their own, they just put everything there. And then I see the let's diversify, let's split it up, and I see people splitting it evenly between CS and I. And when we do that, we really have a little too much in our riskier small cap stocks, not enough in our large C cap. One trend that has been clear with this increased volatility since March, small caps have had wider swings. They're down more year to date. They're up more on the good days, but they're down more on the bad days. So there is increased risk there. So that's going to make up my stock side. And then on the other, my F fund is going to be bonds, government, corporate, mortgage backed. It's going to be all my bond investments. And then my G fund is my fixed account. So it's going to be the most conservative. That's why you hear people talking about moving to G. It's when they want to pull it out of the market, that's typically where they go.
Okay, and when you mentioned the word cap, I believe that stands for capitalization. So a small capitalized company is not necessarily the business down on the corner. These are large numbers, but the big ones, they're not large, they're humongous. Am I putting that into too simple English?
Yeah, exactly. Your small cap companies are still really big, and when we say cap, yes, we're referring to capitalization or the value of those companies. And it's essentially adding all of those up when we talk about how much the C fund represents versus the S. But again, the big companies that you're most familiar with, most of those are falling into the C fund category. So we really in the TSP just have those five funds, and our life cycle funds are then going to be a combination of those five. So our life cycle funds are what we call a fund of funds, meaning that there's nothing new investment wise within them. They're just going to be picking what allocation you should have within those five investments. And the strategy they're going to take is they're going to look at the time frame that you've selected. And similar to what we were talking about before, the further out we are, the longer the time horizon, we're going to be taking more risk. And then as we approach that date, we're going to be scaling that back considerably. But there are some things to keep in mind. Just because you may be retiring at or near the date of a life cycle fund doesn't necessarily mean that I should just always use that, no questions asked. Your withdrawal plans will certainly have a big impact as well.
Okay, over the years that I was teaching with NITP, when I was younger, I taught the classes with younger folks in it. And then as I got a little older, I maybe did mid-career, and now I do primarily pre-retirement. But again, I don't do what you do. I understand it a little bit, enough to be potentially dangerous, so I watch myself. But the questions were interesting as I went, instead of the beginning career, say the mid-career or the pre-retirement, the questions were more knowledgeable, but not necessarily to write a book on, but they understood the difference between risk and risky, and they understood the difference between stocks and bonds for the most part. And I would imagine you, I don't know what your mix is, whether you teach more mid-careers than you do pre-retirement, or but the questions at the mid-career, that's really where I'm going. At the beginning career, the questions are many, and they need to know the answers. They're smart enough to know that they need to know the answers, but they don't necessarily have the boots-on-the-ground knowledge that somebody mid-career. So in your mid-career seminars, is there a trend towards a certain type question with regards to what to do with the money or where they invest it?
Yeah, I mean, I get a lot of allocation questions regardless, but mid-career is no different. We've usually had some investment experience at that point, but we still have a ways to go to retirement as well. And one of the questions is, you know, I'm starting to see some allocation changes. You know, I'm not taking as much risk as I took before. And again, I think it's good to see where these life cycle funds are going if we're using them. If you're actually looking on TSP.gov, pulling up the funds there, you can select any of the funds and pick the quarter and year and see where it came from and where it's going. And the trend that I think is important, especially for mid-career, to look at is that the risk is going to scale back a certain amount. You know, if I'm in the 2050 fund, I'm a little over 80% tied to the market. 10 years roll by, 2040, I'm at a little over 70%, 2030, 60%. But then it kind of falls off a cliff as far as the stock allocation. When I close in on, or if I'm looking at the 2020 fund today, it's just barely over 20% stocks. So for someone mid-career, that's a big change that they're looking at is as time goes by, they're going to see that allocation instead of slowly going down on the stock side, they're going to see it really drop down a lot. And you know what we have within these funds is the Thrift Savings Plan Investment Board. They're deciding how much risk to take. I talked about time horizon, risk tolerance. They're using the time horizon that we select when designing these funds, but they don't know your risk tolerance. They can't pull each individual investor in TSP and say, well, you're aggressive, you're conservative, even though you have the same time frame, so maybe tweak it like this. They also don't know once we reach these dates, 2020, 2030, they don't know how much money we're pulling out. We're saying that's when we plan to start pulling it out. But are we pulling the whole thing out in 1 year? Are we pulling out a very small percent each year? So that can vary a lot from person to person as well, which is why when I'm mid to late career, I really want to be paying attention to what my withdrawal needs, what they might be in retirement, and then seeing if the changes that they're making in the life cycle funds, reducing risk, correlate with that, or if they're maybe a little too much or not enough.
Okay. With your good tutelage, somebody's done well, The accounts are up over the years now. This is not that you gave him the advice on Monday and Friday you were taking all the profits out, but this is over the time. Do you ever get somebody that wants to say, listen, I've been saving, I've been doing without, but I really want to buy that thing I didn't have before? I'm not talking about another house. I'm not talking about a Lamborghini, but they just want to take some chips off the table. And you know, you can't say no. You know, you can't do that. You just say, well, every dollar that you take out, it's going to be that much harder to make up for it when you put it back in, if you put it back in. So is it hard to talk people out of after they've done well and they're maybe late mid-career and to take some out and enjoy it?
Yeah. A lot of that comes down to the retirement planning side of things, and you know, what is our first annuity and Social Security look like? What are we going to have in terms of retirement income needs? And that's an important part to this planning as well. And it will kind of circle back to the allocation, is, you know, what do I need to have in my TST when I retire so that I can live comfortably and, you know, maintain my current standard of living. And in some situations, we really, you know, that expense might have to get pushed aside. And then there's other situations where we're going to have more than enough money. And it is a scenario where, you know, if you want to go ahead and buy whatever that is, go on that vacation, et cetera, we certainly have the money available to do it. And some of that comes down to just showing the analysis. You know, if we need X amount of income and our TSP earns this rate of return, then you can see we'll be just fine. And if things go poorly in terms of investment returns, we're still going to be fine. So I think, you know, running analysis can help with a lot of that, because if we haven't done that, then we really don't know what things are going to look like. And that's a huge question that I get is, you know, do I have enough saved? How much should I have a TSP? And there is no magic number. There's no magic number that we all need to build our TSP account to. It all comes down to what we're going to need to withdraw each year and what percentage of the overall account does that represent. You know, if I'm pulling out somewhere around 4% inflation adjusted, studies have shown that I'm usually going to be just fine if I'm retiring at a normal age. Whereas if I'm pulling out 6, 8, 10% of my TSP each year, that's a recipe for trouble down the line.
Okay. Just in parallel with that, there's another email question, and I think it pretty much parallels what you were just talking about. And here it goes. I hear from experts that delaying Social Security benefits is a tax-efficient move. Okay, maybe it is, because you're not getting the money to pay taxes on it. Okay, so then the question is therefore, would it be wise to withdraw benefits from the TSP or bond purchases prior to applying for Social Security benefits? What would the tax rate? Well, forget the tax rate. We'll do that after we deal with the economics. So it's looking at tax and economics. I think you look at economics first, and it's hard to believe that a tax accountant would say this, and taxes second. but go ahead. You're the financial advisor. I'm the bean counter.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly plenty of unknowns when it comes to Social Security and whether to collect it. You know, for those that worry if Social Security won't be there, even, you know, the studies we see showing our trust fund being depleted 2033, 34, somewhere in that neighborhood, that doesn't mean Social Security is going to go away. The studies I've seen have been, you know, in the ballpark of 80% in terms of what inflows would be at that point to outflows. And there are potential tweaks to the system that would shore those up. You know, maybe it's a little higher income threshold, tax rates, things like that, changes that are made down the road. So I definitely think we'll have Social Security in some form. I'm not sure what tweaks or adjustments there may be. Any analysis I look at in terms of, do we want to take it early, normal age, or late, a lot of it comes down to how long do we think we're going to live. Usually, if we're looking at 62 versus normal retirement age, my break-even point is going to be late 70s, 78, 79, meaning if I knew I was going to live to 90, that I'm going to get a lot more money out of Social Security by waiting to take it. And then between 67 and 70, I'm typically looking at maybe 81, 82 as my break-even point there. So that's part of the decision process. The other part is what you just mentioned. If I'm going to wait and take it at 70, well, where's that money going to come from if I need the income? Well, it's going to come out of my TSP. Well, what kind of taxes am I going to be looking at on those withdrawals? What kind of earnings would I be looking at on that TSP money if I left it? So the fact is, if I have the TSP money in stocks and it does well, then it really hurt me to take that out. I don't know what my performance will be, but the more conservative I'm investing, meaning if I had all my money in the G fund, I'm not missing out on as much, or I have a lower expected return, so I wouldn't be as concerned with it. But the other thing is our tax rates can change. You know, we don't know for sure when this money coming out of the TSP, traditional TSP, it's taxed as ordinary income. Well, what tax bracket are we going to be early in retirement? You know, what tax bracket are we going to be in later? This comes back to whether I want to put my money in the traditional or Roth as well. And the fact is there's unknowns there. We don't know for sure what our tax rates are going to look like 10, 15, 20 years from now. And if we did, then that would certainly impact if we were putting money in the Roth side now, and it would probably impact when we started Social Security too. So definitely something to keep in mind, keep an eye on how tax laws and changes evolve. But I would focus the decision on expected life expectancy, as well as what I could be doing with that money that's in the TSP if I leave it there.
Thank you. Now, I'll be a little bit more focused on these tax brackets, only because I happen to bring the chart with me. But for those that maybe say, well, I don't know what tax bracket I'm in, and it would be pretty hard for me to say, well, this is what it is. But if I look at the tax rates, tax brackets, there's a 22% bracket and a 24% bracket for, I would imagine, most people listening. In other words, it's not a huge difference between the two. So what does that mean? That if I'm in the 22% bracket, I pay a tax of 22% on all my income? Definitely not. And the same would be true for 24%. But everybody listening has a base level of income, be that a salary or, for the folks retired, retirement income. And it's kind of a sweet spot here. Now, the question then is there a state tax bracket? Well, some states have brackets, and some states don't. We are East Coast centric in a way, but I know people in California that listen to it. So those state rates are pretty high. So let's take it and say 5 or 6%. So you'd say, okay, what are you trying to say? That if I'm in the 22% bracket, that I'm really having to add another 5 or 6%, so it's really 20. That's on all my income? No, it's only on kind of the top tier. The other rates were much lower. But we need to understand that, I think, more when the money comes out than when the money goes in. You want to put as much money as you can going in because you save at that tax rate. And again, I don't want to drive people crazy with percentages and whatnot, but if you use that percent, I don't think you'd be far off. So if you were to look at putting more money into the thrift because you haven't topped out, it's going to save you some in taxes. And you'd go, yeah, but I got to pay the taxes when I pull it back out. That's true, but you don't pay taxes while it grows when it's in there. So I just wanted to, I didn't want to spend a lot of time with taxes, but I find a great misunderstanding with regards to what tax brackets mean for different people.
And one thing I found as well, as you know, as you were just saying, they're tiered. But a lot of the investment decisions, that's extra money, so to speak, at the end. So my last few dollars, if I'm going to pull extra money out of my TSP to remove Social Security, well, I already have the base. I already have the base that's been taxed at different levels as it grew from my different sources. So this is the last money, and it is at the higher rate or whatever my bracket is at that point. So it's important to know the numbers on it. But as you were just stating, it doesn't mean all the money was taxed at that rate.
All right. Thank you. Andrew says, enough of you guys talking about taxes. It's time to take a break, and we'll listen to what NITP can do for the listeners.
Who do you trust when making your most important decisions? National Institute of Transition Planning has been the trusted source for federal retirement planning, serving new, mid-career, and pre-retirement federal employees for more than 30 years. NITP's subject matter experts bring more than 800 years of collective expertise on federal benefits, financial transition, and estate planning. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com to sign up for their free monthly newsletter and information about free webinars.
Does planning for retirement seem like a daunting task? Is retirement years away? It will arrive sooner than you think. Prepare now to stay on track. Join the thousands of federal employees and retirees who have already attended National Institute of Transition Planning's free monthly webinars to learn more about retirement and financial planning. NITP is the national leader and trusted source for federal retirement information. Visit NITPinc.com to sign up for NITP's free monthly newsletter and webinar.
Welcome back to the final leg of this For Your Benefit radio show, June 15th, 2020. We're with Brian Kurse. Brian's a certified financial planner, and we're talking about different things. But there was a question that came in, and it says, should you change your I think this came from what you were just talking about. Should you change your allocation because of COVID-19?
Yeah. So what I would do is I would reassess. I would reassess what my time frame is for needing money. And I've basically kind of lumped most of these requests into two categories. The short term and the long term. But just to break those down, when I have, maybe this is my thrift savings plan, I've got money that I'm not going to access for 10, 15, 20 years. In most situations, my answer there is going to be no. If I've decided that I want X percent of my TSP in stocks, then I typically don't want to time the market in that I'm going to sell out now, hope things get worse and scarier, and then I'm going to invest back in at that moment and profit some off of it. That's a difficult task to take on. I don't want to become a day trader in my TSP, so I'm typically going to stay the course. The other time frame is the short one. And the short one is when I need money later this year, next year. You could stretch that out and even say within the next 2 to 3 years for any money, TSP or otherwise, that I'm planning to access. Hopefully, if I was doing my planning correctly up front, I've already lowered the risk a lot on that money that I'm accessing. But let's say that I didn't, things were going well with the market. I didn't want to miss out on profits. But you know what? I've got withdrawals that are going to be coming up later this year. In that instance, then I would look at making changes. I want to get in line with the allocation. The fact of the matter is, when we invest, we talk about this efficient frontier curve. If you look at the life cycle funds, they're going to show it on there. And the idea is we want to get the highest returns for the least amount of risk. And right now, there's more risk, simply put. We've seen more volatile days this year than in a long, long time. And if I look at the range of outcomes, how much the market may go up or down any day or in a week, a month, there's more risk right now. So I don't want to change my long-term allocation just because of that. But if it is shorter, then that's a reason to maybe err on the side of caution. And if I had money that was in stocks, I still have money in stocks that I'm a little uncomfortable with. I'm realizing my risk level, their tolerance isn't quite there. It's not the worst time to scale some of that back a little bit as well. We've seen some decline over the last week. But before that, the markets had a pretty good recovery post the lows in March. So if I have decided that I needed to get some money out of the market, I wouldn't shy away from doing it for those shorter term investments.
Okay, good. You've hit a nerve with these emailers. So this one I know comes from California. So they're listening early. Question for the show. I have heard from experts that in retirement that a 50% stock and a 50% bond portfolio would make sense. I feel more comfortable with 30% stocks and 70% bond portfolio. And again, this is in retirement. Does the investor have to be comfortable? It's a great question. Fire away.
I would say they should be comfortable. I'm not going to be happy with any investor that's that's not comfortable with the risk they're taking, and they're taking it just because they think it's what they're supposed to do. And, you know, there is a range here. It's very obvious someone that's about to retire and needs money shouldn't be 100% in stocks. It may be obvious that someone putting money in for 40 years down the line shouldn't put it all in a fixed account. But there's a lot of flexibility in between. So the 50-50 rule or allocation, I think that kind of derives from that 4% rule, where if I'm retiring and I want to have that money last at least 30 years, then historically, based on stock and bond allocations, I could have half stocks, half bonds, and I'm never running out of money. Thus far, doesn't guarantee us moving forward, but thus far in that 50-50 allocation, and that kind of considered a rule, an option to use from there. Most of your target date allocations, your life cycle funds, when we reach retirement, they're going to be much more conservative. L income, for example, for the longest time has been 20% stock based, which is conservative. That's a conservative portfolio by nature. And if I was in my target date funds and then I reached retirement, everything funneled into the L income. That's about to happen. We're actually seeing some pretty big changes on the TSP life cycle fund in that regard, and that the 2020 fund is going away this month. So come July 1, if we're in the 2020 fund, we'll now be in the L income. And I'll see my fund transition over into retirement into it. But we're also seeing some new funds come out. Right now, you know, we've got the 2050 fund is the furthest one out. They're going to be adding new investments. They're going to be adding to it. And we're actually going to be going to a 2060 fund and a 2065 fund. They're adding funds, life cycle funds, starting July 1 in five-year increments. So it gives me that much more flexibility spacing it out. So that's definitely something to look at come the second half of this year, starting July 1 for my investment options. But back to the, you know, the question here, my life cycle income fund has been 20% stock based. Last year, the TSP board said, you know what, we are going to make that change and make the L income fund 30% stock based. Maybe they are just a little too conservative in retirement, but we don't want to go in at once because you've got a lot of retired federal employees that have all their money in the L income at this point and just move 10% into the market on one day. So we're actually going to make the change over a 10-year window. It's going to be very gradual. And this is, again, where that tool on the TSP website can help. I can look at the allocation now, which is about 22% stocks as of today, if I'm in the L income fund. And then I can look at over 5 years how that'll be increasing a little bit. But what TSP is telling us, if we're retired, is that, you know, we should really be, if we're in the L income fund, that we should only be 22% stocks today. And then they're adjusting that to be closer to 30%. So there's, so one person might consider that conservative, one may not. But I think they said there's a range in terms of what's okay. And again, it comes back to your specific withdrawal needs, your risk tolerance, and both options are okay. I'm not going to tell someone at 50-50 they're wrong, and I'm not going to tell someone at 20-80 that they're wrong either. It's going to depend on the circumstances.
All right. I know some compulsive people, namely me. So after listening to you, I'm going to go and I'm going to do it. Now, I don't want to wait. What's your response to that? Find another financial planner?
Well, hold on. When you say I'm going to do it, what are we referring to?
I'm going to move my money now. I don't want to gradually move the money from cautious to less than cautious to maybe a little aggressive. I'm going to go now.
I gotcha. No, I mean, I said if that's what I'm never going to try to stop someone from making the change. I just want to make sure that they've thought through all the points on it. Again, I'm seeing two extremes right now. The big one is obviously people that don't want the risk and they're pulling everything out. And again, I think it's important to think through how that process is going to work if I'm going that route. Am I saying that I never want to invest in stocks again? And maybe if I'm approaching retirement, I realize I've got more than enough to live off of just with G Fund returns moving forward. Then you know what? Maybe I am done with the risk of the market. I don't need to take the risk and let's just scale it back. It's a permanent change and that's fine. But when I have that person that's 20, 30 years away and they're saying, you know what? No, I want most of my investments in stocks. I just don't want them there right now. then we're basically day trading at that point. We're saying, I want to sell out now. And then when things are scarier, when more people are panicking, that's when I'm going to get back in. And the reality is most of us aren't going to do that. You know, when I look back at 2008, I think the most common time from everyone I talked to, the most common time to get out of the market for those who held on for a while was December 2008. We wind up hitting market lows March 2009. Most of those people were not getting back in March 2009. They were getting back in March 2010, March 2011. Once the dust has settled, the market's already gotten back near all-time highs. That's when things look safe again. And that's why as we're hitting all-time highs, that feeling is, well, I'm missing out. Everyone's getting rich in the market. Why aren't I? And a lot of times that may be once the recovery's already happened and perhaps, you know, a new pullback is on the horizon. So the emotional side of things will definitely has ways of leading us to the wrong decision, which is why I want to be careful going down that road.
I'd imagine dealing with clients, they have different mindsets, and some might go, okay, I'm going to take your advice, steady as we go. And somebody maybe that's not like that, but they're midway between, and they go, well, I can't look at the paper every day. I can't look at the my iPhone to tell me where the market is at 10:51 Eastern. What do you do with that? That takes some discipline, I'd imagine, on your part, because it's quote irrational behavior, but the person is generally concerned that the money might not do as well as if they moved it.
Yeah. I mean, on the one hand, it's not a bad idea not to be looking at our account value every day. It's on paper, so to speak, but seeing those swings, can definitely be tough to handle. When I'm saying that, you know, five or even six figures changes to my account value on a daily basis, things like that. So I want to be careful. If I am going to look at it every day, I need to have some perspective. And otherwise, I may not. Maybe I'm waiting for the quarterly statements. But even then, a lot of people realize the first quarter of this year, et cetera, that there's a lot more potential volatility there than what they were thinking. And I think it comes back to thinking through your time frame and how long the money's going to be there. And a lot of these ups and downs will smooth out over that window. But at the end of the day, the other side of that is if you just realize, no, this is not something that I want to risk or that I can handle, then we realize, well, maybe our risk tolerance wasn't as aggressive as we thought. You know, we thought we were comfortable with this, and unfortunately, it's been this situation that now makes us realize that we don't have that risk tolerance that we thought. And maybe that's a reason that we rebalance as well, or I scale back. I just don't like to see situations where someone decides, you know what, no, I don't want the risk. And then as soon as things look clear again, they're saying, okay, well, maybe we should go for it now. And they're buying in, they're selling out once we have sell-offs, and they're buying in after the recoveries. And that's obviously not what we want to be doing.
Okay. Now, as we move through one's life cycle, so to speak, what happens to the TSP Life Cycle Fund in retirement? So we've talked about, kind of beginning, mid-career, late mid-career, but, eventually we're probably going to retire. So what happens to the life cycle fund when that happens?
Well, first off, we're never forced to do anything in our TSP. You know, we're not going to be forced to move it if we don't want to, and we're never going to be forced to make an investment change. We're always going to have the flexibility to continue to make interfund transfers and adjust our allocation. Now, if I went into the life cycle fund, let's say I went into the 2020 fund 20 years ago, since whenever the life cycle fund started, I went into the 2020 fund. It's continued to get more conservative. Well, now I've retired in 2020. What's going to happen? Well, we're actually going to be moving right into the life cycle income fund. That's where all the other target date allocations eventually merge into. So that's why that life cycle income fund is important to pay attention to, because that's where you're headed. That's what's at the end of the road, so to speak. So that 2020 fund had 10 years ago was over half stocks in it. And as of today, it's only got about 23% in stocks. And then just a couple of weeks from now, come July 1, that 2020 fund is going to cease to exist. It's going to be in my life cycle income fund, and I'm going to have about 22% stocks there. So the normal curve is to move into life cycle income and then just continue to reduce my stock exposure along the way. We're in this really unique situation right now that they've decided to rebalance the life cycle income fund from 20% stocks conservative to 30% stocks, which is still conservative, but again, not a change they want to make overnight, because you've got plenty of retired federal employees with all that money in the life cycle income fund, as I was just mentioning, and they don't want to take 10% of your portfolio and move it into stocks overnight. So that income fund of 22% stock will be gradually increasing up to 30%. And outside of just moving money to GNF, that's as conservative as it's going to get within the life cycle funds, is whatever the allocation is they have there. Which leads me to another topic, which is we can use some of the other funds in combination. We used to see, you know, people taking the 2030 and 2040 and splitting it because they were retiring in 2035, which is certainly an option. With the addition of these new funds that are coming out in a couple of weeks, that go in five-year increments, it'll give us more flexibility to not have to go that route. But the other option is, you know, let's say I wanted to use the L income, but I either wanted a little more in stocks or I wanted a little more just in a fixed account. Well, I can always put 80% of my TSP in the L income and then put the other 20% in the G fund or in some other funds or something like that as well. I wanna be aware of what my total allocation is gonna look like, but there's nothing wrong with using some of those strategies to customize as well.
All righty. How about this? How about a phone number and/or an email address?
My telephone number is 703-287-7139. My email address is first initial, last name, so it's BKURRUS@SFP, as in Scott Frank Paul, financial.com. As you mentioned, I am a fellow seminar presenter, so I do a lot of work with federal employees, and I'm certainly happy to answer whether it's a TSP allocation question, the life cycle funds, and other things that come up. Always happy to help federal employees if I can.
Very good. Andrew says, I'm glad you got that spot in because you don't have much time left. So, Brian, thanks for being. Thanks for giving great advice. And the listeners, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP and sponsored by WAPA. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. This show can also be heard on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search For Your Benefit. Thanks for listening.